Welcome to part two of our interview with Stephen Blackwell about 232 Birch.
Let's go back to the 232 Birch for a moment here to talk about that. When these things were going on and you started to have these experiences, especially when your wife saw the little boy that was, you know, running around and you saw the little boy, what was her background with paranormal experiences? Was this all new to her? What was she thinking?
It was. Yeah, no, it was all new to her. She had less intelligence about the paranormal than I did at that time, which, you know, I didn't have a lot. And so to her, it started off a little more frightening for her. But as the experiences continued throughout the years, both of us found it very intriguing. We were very interested in seeing what the next experience would show us. And we saw everything from doors opening and closing to salt and pepper shakers being moved from our kitchen up to our bathtub. We saw, shoes being spewed across the house when it wasn't one of us that did it. And our children were much too young to be able to do that. We figure that, you know, those full-bodied apparitions that we think we saw with the little boy followed a theme that seemed to take place with all of our experiences. And that went back to, you know, the sound we couldn't really relate to the child. But, you know, my wife seeing the boy walk past her peripheral vision and seeing the boy standing out in the rain outside, those were only the first couple of things that seemed to kind of float around a little boy's presence. And so we often asked ourselves, you know, I wonder if a little boy had passed away in this property. And it wasn't until later we started doing some looking into the death records and so on, like I said, but we were unable to kind of find any of that information, true or false, for that property. Mm-hmm. And we weren't able to get any help on it either. So it was she was very much intrigued like me, and now we both investigate together.
So you had these experiences together in this house, and I'm assuming that's kind of the catalyst of what made you both go, maybe we should go look into more of these things. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And it took me about 10 years after I left 232 Birch before I wrote my book.
Okay.
I kept all my memories in my head. And one day I said, you know, I've got to get this jotted down. And so I started writing about it. And as I wrote about it, I enjoy telling stories. I enjoy storytelling. And as I started writing down these experiences, I sort of got the passion within inside me to write a book about it and get it published as a memoir. A lot of interest in that book. And amazingly enough, after I put out 232 Birch and started to build my network, I had so many people contact me and say, you know, I've never told anybody this, but I know you'll understand.
Sure.
And they tell me about a paranormal experience that they've had. And I've probably heard hundreds of claims of the paranormal from people that were interested in my book. And believe it or not, Tony, many of them revolved around a loved one who had just passed away, who they woke up in the night and saw that person sitting on the end of their bed, or saw them standing in the corner of their room. I hear a lot of those stories. And so when I hear stories about the paranormal now, I just nod my head and I agree that it's probably exactly what they think. I understand that the brain plays funny tricks on us. Different EMF readings will, constitute paranoia or, allow you to lose your balance or so on. But some of these experiences were just too real to not be real, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
There was just no way that I could have debunked it. And like I said, as a couple more experiences went on at 232 Birch, they got a little bit more creepy. And we realized that there was more to it than we even understood. I'd have to say that for the first 8.5 years that we were at that property, we assumed that there was the energy of a little boy and that was it. But a few weeks before moving out of 232 Birch for reasons that had nothing to do with the paranormal, we saw a shadow of a man walk past our door. We had some friends over visiting, and we were saying goodbye to them. So we all went outside. It was a nice summer day. and I closed my front door. My children were both upstairs sleeping at the time, and we had one of those half moon windows in the door. And I had my back to the door, and my wife and our two friends were on the sidewalk in front facing me, and we were all talking, saying our goodbyes. And all three of them at the same time, they kind of inhaled quickly, and their eyes got big. And of course, I spun around and didn't see anything, and I turned back to them. I said, "What's going on?" And they all pointed at that window, and they said, "A man just walked past that window and the inside and was heading upstairs." And of course, that's where my children were, so I grabbed the guy friend that I was with, and I said, "Let's go, we're going up there." And so we went upstairs, checked on the children. Of course, they were fine, and there was no, there was absolutely nothing up there. And, but they, and this was something I didn't see myself, but they swore they saw a man's profile walk right past the window. And so it kind of helped us relate to a previous experience when our daughter as an infant was in her crib, and my wife had a very stringent routine in how she would put my daughter down to bed, you know, with the same blanket configuration and facing the same way and so on. And the one time she had went up to check on my daughter and screamed for me to come up and ask me if I had moved her, because she was now facing the other way in the crib. Her blanket configuration was completely different. And we felt at that time, well, how is this even possible? We kind of figured that this was a yet another paranormal experience, but we wondered how it was possible when we were dealing with a little child apparition at the time. When we saw them, when it was reported that the man had walked past our window, it kind of started to make sense to us a little bit, that maybe there was more than one entity residing within the 232 Birch property. We'd moved out only a few weeks after that, and that was our last experience. But quite fascinating, I must admit.
Now, you said that you moved out for reasons completely unrelated to the paranormal, but did you ever have that as a thought of, maybe we should get out of here? We got kids. We really don't know exactly what this stuff is that's going on around our house. We don't know exactly how far it may escalate. Was that ever a thought?
You know, I'll be honest with you, Tony, it really wasn't. And I think it's because, you know, when you have a couple of experiences that don't physically harm you or, you know, mentally throw you into a downward spiral, they become less fearful and more intriguing. We really got to the point where it was like, okay, well, we know that these things are happening. Nobody's getting harmed. There obviously seemed to be some sort of physical manipulation with my daughter. However, she was completely fine. And no, we never thought about moving out for that reason. To us, it was really quite interesting. It was something that we wanted to look further into. And it really became almost like a hobby to us at that time, because it was such an intriguing fascination of experiences that we wanted to see more of it. And so we started, you know, poking around and talking with more and more people, you know, like yourself, who have had these experiences. And we really came to the realization that we're not alone. There are many that are able to witness these accounts, and there's many that can't. And, you know, the skeptics are, I've always said that, you know, skeptics only need to turn into believers by experiencing something themselves. And, you know, there are many skeptics out there that have actually probably experienced the paranormal, but they choose to shut that off in their brain and you know, not accept it as a separate energy that may, you know, it may actually exist in a realm that's close to ours. And that's something that, of course, scientists and people like us are still trying to get to the bottom of, right?
Sure. And so would you say that once you moved out of the home, this is an interest, I don't think I've ever asked this question before, but did you and your wife almost miss the ghosts after you moved out of that house?
Yes. Yes. The truth is yes is the answer to that. And it's just because it wasn't a frightening experience. You know, one of the later things that happened, I had mentioned earlier, is I saw my downstairs bathroom door open very slowly, and then it closed very slowly, and it got to the frame, and it kept on going, and it actually clicked shut. And, you know, when you see those things, it's, I just sat there, and you know how you've got the anxious feeling in your chest, right? Well, that never went away, and I still have that to this day, but it doesn't scare me anymore. It and same with my wife. It's more of a, wow, this is really fascinating, you know. And then you start asking questions, and you start reaching out to this kind of energy, and you hope for some sort of a response. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were able to actually get a response when we were sitting in a session the second time I was at the Birdcage Theater. There was a fella that used to run the Birdcage Theater who had actually been shot and killed in the town of Tombstone, but not at the Birdcage Theater. However, he had been a worker there for 20 plus years. And while we were sitting around as a group during a ghost investigation, I had brought his name up because I had just saw a program. I believe I was watching Ghost Hunters or one of those shows, and I saw a program of how this fellow used to run it. And so I mentioned his name, and the facilitator at the time had a ghost box running, and so we were listening to the static, and we weren't really getting any feedback. But once I mentioned this guy's name in front of this group, we started hearing funny sounds come through the ghost box. And so, you know, coincidental? Maybe. But there's been so many claims within that building of, you know, poker chips rustling and the smell of cigar smoke and things like that, that I just chalked it up right away as to that's another experience that we've just had. And even though it wasn't really solidified and proven, I really can, you know, I seem to be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's unreal now. And that comes right down to, you know, taking photographs and looking at the photographs. I can usually pick out any kind of anomalies within a photo or a video for that matter. And then, you know, through my research, and I'm sure that you know this as well, it seems like this energy is picked up a little bit easier on you know, digital film or, you know, digital means or through video. And also children and animals seem to have a greater relation to this kind of energy. And, you know, obviously that would be the size of their brains and not having so much responsibility that stresses that adults have. They're able to maybe foresee this stuff a little bit. So, you know, all the children that talk about having imaginary friends, I relate that now to having paranormal energy. Sure. That they are witnessing.
Right? I do too. I think that's something that we quite often deal with on the program, and even on our other show, Real Ghost Stories Online. On the air, my wife had the realization that her imaginary friend was in fact something paranormal because she could see him, and she didn't even realize Oh, wow. That other people didn't see their imaginary friends until we were having that conversation.
Wow.
On the air. Something. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, I mean, when it's normal to you, unless it gets discussed, you otherwise, yeah. You otherwise don't realize it. So when you're out there and you're doing these investigations now, obviously there's a curiosity. You've lived in a house that had paranormal activity in it. And you go out there and you do some investigating, and I'd say every investigator, you know, it depends, you know, what their goals are of the investigation. How would you say your goals are when you do go to a location to investigate something?
Yeah. Well, usually when I'm been invited to investigate, it's coming from an owner or a person that has had claims in the past. And so what I do is I go in with the expectation that I'm able to kind of, I've seen this kind of energy in the past. And if that energy is existing, you know, hopefully I can be there at the time when it happens and I can witness it firsthand and report it. I'll be honest with you, a lot of the places that I've investigated, I've come up with nothing. That's using EMF technology and, you know, asking a lot of questions, putting down sometimes some objects that may be bait, and speaking to you know, what I have heard as stories as being those entities. But a lot of times I realize that, you know, this energy just doesn't sit there waiting for you to come and talk to it. It's a lot of times it seems to be very residual and, unintelligent. It seems to just show up when it shows up, when there's enough energy that can allow it to manifest. And it really became interesting to me to do some more research on the difference between residual hauntings as opposed to intelligent hauntings. And to be honest with you, Tony, I still can't really wrap my head around the intelligent hauntings, such as people getting scratched or pushed downstairs, or even communication to answer commands, because I've never actually had that kind of experience before. Most of the things that I've seen, like the little boy, I kind of put my head into the fact that it's kind of a residual kind of energy that exists.
When you're hitting those residual energies, or sometimes, obviously there are intelligent energies. Let's say you were to come across intelligent. Is the goal there to recognize that it's there, to hear it? Is the goal to help it? Is the goal like from that sort of angle? What's your mindset there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if I was to ever come across something that I would call intelligent, my number one goal would be to try to communicate with it, like many investigators do. See if I'm able to get responses from it based on questioning tactics, or at least try to get a response from them. Notice or a command. I think that would be absolutely fascinating. I would love to see something that actually could communicate with me. I mean, that would be fantastic for me, and it wouldn't necessarily be to save it. I don't think there's any real reason to save this kind of energy. I believe that there's energy that exists in a certain place simply because perhaps it was a traumatic end of their life. They don't realize perhaps that they've passed on. Their energy, or what I would call their spirit, or their, this apparitional energy, just, it seems to be that most of the time it's just there. And because I haven't experienced any real hauntings that I would find to be dangerous, I just can't really process the fact that I would have to worry about anything. Although sure, I'm a believer of, seeing a lot of these stories of people who have had perhaps demonic experiences. However, I've never had something like that. So I think if I was ever to come across something that was more intelligent, I would just try to reach out to it and see if I could get some responses from it, and hope that I have a device working in the background that can record that.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Steve Blackwell about 232 Birch. To check out Steve's books, just search Stephen Blackwell on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.